Okay, the next key, and this is a key that I haven't listed as a key yet, but it's something that I've taught. Now, when I first started talking about the keys, I was planning on writing about 12 books explaining them, but then as Rick started the keys group and got me involved in teaching, and as I began to give out teachings to everybody, I give out a lot of the teachings that were going to be in the 12 books. So the 12 books do not need to be written, because I have written a lot of the information about the keys, not everything, but a lot of it. And the next key is the key...
The sixth?
What?
Is this the sixth?
Seven.
The last one was five.
The last one was six.
No, there's glory. The
sixth
key.
What number was glory?
Five.
Yeah, I've given out the 12th key.
And the note, for sure.
Yeah. I give out the 12th key and the first six and the 12th key so far. Yeah. The 12th key was the word is God. I give that out, and we'll go into that at the end here. But the next key is the gathering principle.
Seventh key?
What?
Are you talking about the seventh key?
I believe it's a seventh key. The seventh key is the gathering principle. And I've already taught quite a bit about that, written books about it. But we'll just go over it briefly. What is the gathering principle? How well have you guys absorbed that? Yeah.
That light or lights, when gathered together, shine brighter and have more of an impact than they would if they were scattered. And that applies on different levels as per the law of correspondences.
Okay, that's part of it. Any other comment?
Watch any system long enough and it will begin to organize. Watch any organized system long enough and it will begin to disorganize. And then it will begin to reorganize. So it's a state of coming together of particles to create something, and then they disorganize and then they reorganize.
Okay, the gathering principle is basically this. It's the principle that's behind all evolution. Is that certain elements that are key ingredients will gather together, and as they gather together, they create something greater than themselves. And when they create something greater than themselves and it works, then it remains and becomes a unit in the next gathering. And gathering after gathering produces evolution after evolution. For instance, let's look at humanity. When humanity first began, as far as we know, we just existed as family units. Okay? And then the family units, because of different needs that they had, they gathered together into tribes. Why did they gather together into tribes?
Protection.
Right, they had a protection. They just as family units back in the ancient times, there was a lot of wild beasts out there that could rip them to pieces. So they were forced to gather together into larger numbers, and as they gathered together into larger numbers, they created tribes. And for instance, even in the Bible, we have the beginning of Israel as the 12 tribes. You know, they're not called 12 nations, they're called 12 tribes. 12 tribes that was in one nation. So they gathered together into tribes. And they usually had some tribal leader that was pretty powerful, told them what to do. And they got some cooperation from the tribal members. They were fairly cooperative. We go into the ancient civilizations in the jungles and stuff and look at the tribes there. They're fairly cooperative. They have quite a bit of authority, the leaders do, but they get cooperation from the people, and the people often are have pretty good equality about them. But eventually, the tribes start to gather together. And when the tribes gather together, what did they create?
Kingdoms.
Kingdoms and nations, didn't they? And then, over that kingdom was a beastly-like authority they called a king, or tribal leader, or a dictator, or authoritarian. Usually, in the old days, he was just called a king. And the king had absolute power over life and death. The king was given power that beyond anything that was in the tribes. And the king had absolute power over life and death over the people. And so this, a lot of people like this idea because the kingdom had a lot more power than just a tribe. And they had a lot more power of protection from the wild beasts and from other nations and other tribes that were out there that were out of control. No tribe could challenge a nation with a strong king. And so a lot of people gravitated toward a king, and they thought this was pretty much the ultimate. Get a good king, you really got something. You got some protection. But then a lot of people become dissatisfied with having a king because he could have your head cut off. He could have you in prison. He had total power over your life and death. And so a lot of people become dissatisfied with the king. So people began to gather together and create a higher form of government. First happened in Greece and Athens. They created a somewhat of a democracy. A lot of people call it a pure democracy, but only a small percentage of the people really did participate in voting, but they had the closest thing to democracy up to that time. And then eventually a new world was discovered. And word went out, there was a new world out there, and there was a chance for greater freedom to escape from the power of the king and be your own person. And this was a calling card that went out. And so the people that were more into lovers of freedom left Europe and came to America to build a better world. And when they got here, they gathered together, and because they were people that loved freedom, they created a system with greater freedom and more democracy than they had under the king. So by the gathering together of these people, it created something greater than they had before. And now we're approaching the time of the next gathering, when the gathering of lights will happen. And when the gathering of lights happens, we will create something that has never been here before. Something greater than a kingdom, greater than a regular democracy, greater than anything that's ever been in existence before. Because when the lights are gathered, they are dissatisfied with the way things were, and they want to create something better. And the next thing that will eventually be established will be the molecular relationship. But it will be a while before that completely permeates. But some of the ideas on the molecular relationship will take hold. And some of them are already doing this. As you know, like a lot of businesses are starting up where they're employee-owned. Like in Boise, the headquarters of Walmart is there, and Walmart is employee-owned, and their prices are a lot better than anybody else.
No,
no, not Walmart, Winco. I'm sorry.
Weimar.
Yeah. It's a grocery store called Winco. Do you guys have a Winco in your area?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a really great place to shop. And it's employee-owned. Okay, and that they're following some of the principles in the molecular relationship, not all, but enough of them to make them more efficient than a regular run grocery store.
Are there any write-ups about Winco that I could share with people?
Probably, if you want to Google it. Yeah. I don't suppose you have one in New Jersey, do you, since it's mainly in the West.
I think
thought it was Albertsons you were saying.
Yeah, Albertsons started in Boise also.
But they're the same similar thing with the employees on
them? Yeah, totally different people. Albertsons is run kind of conventionally.
Oh.
Okay. Winco is run by, it's employee owned. And employees are really, I've talked to, they're really happy with working there. Almost all of them have stock. If you read the book, The Molecular Relationship, you'll see that a lot of things that Winco corresponds to the molecular relationship.
Trader Joe's isn't really patterned after that, but they have a lot of things that are good for the employees, and it's a good environment. I don't know if you guys have Trader Joe's out here.
Yeah, we got Trader Joe's.
But like they don't keep people on one area for more than 2 hours. Like you don't come in and then you're checking bags for 8 hours.
Oh, really?
Or you're, you know, putting out things. They mix it up. So people are in a better state because they're not, you know, chained to one thing and they get the change.
Yeah, when I was young, no employer was concerned about keeping the employees happy at all. It seemed like you just come to work for us and you just be happy you're getting a paycheck, you know, and that was the attitude. And now it's totally changing in the fact that there's a lot more employee-owned businesses. There's a lot of businesses where people are trying to keep the employees happy and take care of them and make their lives better. And so it's a lot different than it was. We don't notice the changes very much because things change fairly slowly. And sometimes there's over a period of 40, 50 years, there's a lot bigger change than we realize. And there's now with COVID, they're having a hard time getting employees at all, and that's good and bad. It's bad in the fact that you go to a restaurant, you got to wait longer for service because they're always short-handed. But it's good in the fact that they're thinking, well, what can we do to make our employees happy so that they will want to work for us? And so it's kind of a good and bad mixture here. And hopefully the good will outweigh the bad of when everything is said and done. Any more comment on the gathering? But it's a principle behind all evolution. It's prophesied in the Bible, talked about in the Bible almost more than anything else, yet you never hear a sermon on it in church. You don't hear a sermon on it in the Protestant churches, the Catholic Church, or even the Mormons anymore. And one of the articles of faith is around the gathering of Israel. And this was one of the points that sore points that got me and Curtis excommunicated. Is we criticize the church for no longer teaching the principle of the gathering. And when we talk to Bruce R. McConkie and Mark E. Peterson about it, they say, "Well, I mean, we're gathering. We gather people in churches."
So, how's
that different than any other church? You believe in the literal gathering of Israel, gathering together in churches is not the gathering. It was to gather together to build cities. That's what it says rather than Doctrine and Covenants. When's the last time you guys built a city? Well, you know, we don't need to build cities anymore. And we warn them that the reason that they were supposed to build cities was for their protection, because they would be able to be self-sufficient and be able to protect themselves if there was some type of a collapse. If there's a collapse right now, we're all basically screwed, except for the Amish. The Amish are people that are going to be most prepared if there is an economic collapse. They will probably rule the earth or rule the country.
The idea was to build cities or stakes. A stake of Zion and a city of Zion was a synonymous term, and they were not to be, you know, too large, you know, maybe 12,000 building lots in each stake.
Right, around 12 to 20,000 people. Yeah, that was our dream, was to build a city, and we, Curtis and I, had hoped that by now we would all be living in a, having several cities built, but that never happened. So we're just as exposed as anybody else right now, unfortunately. So I hope the time of any collapses will be delayed enough that we can be prepared. Or even better is that there will be no collapse. That would be the greatest thing, because there's so many things that could produce a collapse. Number one, if there was a solar flare. Back in the days of Abraham Lincoln, when they just built the first telegraph wires, there was a solar flare so strong that it set the telegraph wires on fire and ruined the telegraph systems between a number of cities. Now, can you imagine if we had a flare like that today? Now, on the average, a flare like that happens every 150 to 200 years. And so we're lucky we haven't had one since the days of Abraham Lincoln. But it's just a matter of time before one shows up, and we're completely unprepared for it. We could spend a couple $1 billion and protect our electrical systems, but our politicians are more concerned about global warming and other things. But this, if a giant solar flare hit us and took down our entire electrical grid, could you imagine? Two-thirds of the people would be dead within a couple months. It would be a terrible thing. So that's just one thing that could happen. Second thing that could happen could be a total economic collapse. And with this tremendous amount of money that they're borrowing, you know, they're taking us much nearer to that possibility than we were a few years ago. So
the economy has to collapse because it's so corrupt, and eventually it will, but it has to.
Yeah, and
collapse before it can be reborn.
And if it did, it would be almost as bad as a solar flare. I mean, the stores would be wiped out of everything that's in it within a couple of days. So there's a lot of things that could happen. The best scenario is there's no solar flare in the immediate future, and we're able to survive without a total economic collapse, just maybe a depression or something like that. So let's hope for the best, and that we, as agents of light, can do our best to prepare for that which is to come. I've always thought that if the time come that there was a total collapse or something, I'd get some type of message. But you never know, because sometimes the powers that be, if there is something that affects everybody and there's nothing that any individual can do, there may not be a message. If there is a way of escape, there will be messages given. A lot of Mormons think there is going to be a nuclear war. That's another thing. A lot of prophecies about nuclear war that haven't come true. And they think the Chinese and the Russians and the UN are going to come over here, try to take over, and we're going to have a trek to Zion and overcome all of our enemies. But a lot of that is a little bit of blue sky in there, and based on what people are picking up from their emotional bodies. But what's really going to happen is quite difficult to tell, because, you know, everybody that I've ever seen predict specifics about the future has been wrong. I haven't found one person that has been right on any more than a stop clock is right twice a day. You know, every once in a while somebody comes close. But I haven't found one person that has made specific prophecies that have been right. I found a lot of people on the internet that have made specific prophecies about earthquakes, and there was an earthquake somewhere. There's always an earthquake somewhere, and they claim they were right. And then I check it out, and I find, you know, the guy was off where the earthquake was. He was off how big it was. He was off a lot of points on that earthquake, but he claimed success. You know? And this happens again and again. I think that'd be a good thing for us to contemplate as a group as to the future, what we can do to prepare. It's quite possible that people here could get inspiration, visions, dreams about what we can do to better prepare for the future to come. Because there's all kinds of prophecies about the future that are wrong. Every one that has been made has been wrong, except a couple that I've made. It's been wrong about the future. Just shows how malleable it is. But I think, in my mind, the masters desire us to work into the new age without a total collapse of society. This is what I believe that they are working on. But it's not a guarantee. It's possible there could be a collapse, but they are trying to engineer things so that we can avoid a total collapse. There's going to be difficulties, but I believe that it's possible to enter the future age without a total collapse. Just have a few difficulties and work around them. Okay, we'll take a short break and then go over one more key before we end this session.